12th, 2016 board meeting. Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Dunlap?
Here.
Mrs. Tornero?
Here.
Mr. Truax?
Here.
Mr. Whitman?
Here.
Mr. Begany?
Here. Would you please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item 2.01, approval of the minutes from the June 21st regular board meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truax. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Item 3.01, approval of the agenda for this evening's board meeting. Madam Superintendent, do we have any changes to the agenda this evening?
President Begany, there are no changes to the agenda.
President Begany, I would like to ask for one change, though. I would like to break out 9.01. Item 2, the Assistant Superintendent only. And then item 3, to discuss that in executive session, that is at the conclusion of our regular meeting, and then vote on that after, when we come back in after executive session.
Okay, motion on the floor reads that item 9.01, item 2, Assistant Superintendent, and item 3, transitional days for the Assistant Superintendent position, be moved to executive session. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Whitman. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, call the roll for this particular change to the amendment or to the agenda.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
I'm just still trying. Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Now for the, are there any other changes to the agenda this evening?
President Begany, there are no changes.
Thank you. Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
That includes
everything?
Yep, okay. We're done
just
now.
Just want to making sure that we don't oversee anything. All right. Item 4.01, student recognition. I'm going to turn this over to Mrs. Dunlap.
Okay, I get the honor of doing this tonight. There are two young women that we are going to be honoring tonight, and I didn't realize I walked in right behind two of you. Could I ask Sarah Reidlinger and Tanisha Thomas to come to the front, please? And I feel a little rude sitting here, but I'm going to do this while I have a microphone and I can read these, and then I'll come down and present them to you. But both of these are certificates of recognition to Sarah and to Tanisha. They have demonstrated that they are leaders today by placing first in the website design competition at the 2016 Business Professionals of America National Leadership Conference. This award is given on the 12th day of July, 2016. We are very proud of both of you as a district, and this is the second year in a row that these two young ladies have brought home a national award. So congratulations to both of you.
Let's have one more round of applause for that. Congratulations, please. All right, moving on to item 5.01. Board members may speak on different issues at the time. We'll begin with Mr. Truax, please.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming out tonight. I'm going to make this brief. As you can tell, my voice doesn't want to work tonight. Thanks again for coming out. I do want to mention that the Raider Run is this weekend on Saturday. Starts at 8 o'clock. over at Livingston and Blacklick. So thank you very much.
Ms. Tornero?
I don't have anything. Thank you.
Mr. Whitman?
I guess I'd like to thank everybody for coming out here tonight. I hope that you came in here for a Board of Education meeting and not just because there was hoping there might be a Pokemon somewhere around here. But, I also want to thank everybody for all their feedback about the dress code, which we'll be talking about later tonight and voting on. I read all the letters there, had some good points worthy of consideration, and we'll talk about them later. Yes, I too will be at the 5K. Never have I ever run in a 5K or 10K run, but I'll be doing it this Saturday to support the girls' soccer team, so I hope to see some of you there. And lastly, I'd like to wish this year's Raider Marching Pride the best of luck as they head off to band camp at Pilgrim Hills next week. So, stay hydrated out there.
Ms. Dunlap?
Just again, thank you for everyone coming out tonight. I can't believe by our next board meeting, we will be back in school. I know. I've been walking through Target and Kroger with blinders on as everyone is getting their back-to-school things to out. I love school, but I do enjoy summer, particularly with my children. I wish I could be at the 5K run as well, but for the next 10 days, I will be at the Franklin County Fair with a horse and with my daughter, eating, living, and breathing that. I hope that everyone is having a good summer, though. Again, I know that Tanisha and Sarah left, but so proud of so many of the awards and the accolades that our students bring home in this district. And two national awards 2 years in a row is just amazing and speaks well for our outstanding students. And that's about all this evening. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. There was a Pokemon actually in the park. I checked before I came in. Nothing inside the building. I will be at the Raider Run because I'm going to support and hopefully need oxygen afterwards, but I'm planning on being there this Saturday morning to do that. But there are a couple of things that I wanted to talk about tonight, just briefly. If you've been paying attention to the news, you've seen the issues with ECOT, the online school, and they're currently going under review, shall we say, with the Ohio Department of Education, which this just proves, again, that any time that a school district is involved with a charter school, they should be monitored just the same way as any public school district. And I want to assure everyone out there that this board will continue to do so with any charter school that we are affiliated with to make sure that they're doing things and held accountable for their actions just the same as the public education system would be. On a separate note for this, I would like to bring up a small topic that as we move forward and look ahead in the next few years. There have been some calls that I've gotten recently about the potential for moving Reynoldsburg to having an all-day kindergarten program. It's been discussed in the past, and this would be a process that would go through, but in the interest of transparency and things like that, that's something that I may want the board to consider and the superintendent to consider as we move forward because of the importance of getting kids a good head start, as well as making sure that, especially with the increased testing that the state has, that it just gives that much extra time to prepare our students to be where they need to be, especially with some of our students that might not have the same opportunities as others in the district. That's just a food for thought nugget right now. It's going to be coming down as we kind of move and progress through the next school year, but that is something that we can work with, and if it looks like it's feasible, we may try to move in that direction. Other than that, I do hope you are all enjoying what's left of your summer. We still have just under a month before school starts again, and it can be exciting. I haven't gotten there yet, but it can be exciting. Meanwhile, we'll go ahead and move on to item 5.02, the treasurer's contract, which is up for approval. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Tenero, seconded by Ms. Dunlap. Any discussion?
I would just like to thank Tammy for her many years of outstanding service. This is truly a pleasure to, I know I've only been on the board for 6 months, but truly has been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to mention a couple of things here with this. Again, thank you for your service and your openness to let members of the community come in and speak with you about all things financial, especially over the last couple of years. You have more than educated members of the community and myself, who is not an expert in the numbers aspect of things. So I appreciate that, and we're glad to have you on board for as long as we can.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Tornero.
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begney?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 6.01, items from the superintendent.
President Begney, members of the board, just a couple of items. I'm sure that some of you have seen the signs throughout the community advertising a job fair that's happening in the city, which will take place tomorrow at Summit Campus. So we invite you out from 1 to 4 to the job fair, or anybody you know who's looking for employment. A couple of key business partners will be represented at that job fair tomorrow. Of course, we will have L Brands, Amazon, and our partners from Franklin University. So we're hoping that this is a very successful event, and lots of folks are employed. And we'll keep a watch on it to see if this is something we might be able to do when students are in session to help them get gainful employment in the future. The other thing is we learned just recently that our partnership with the Franklin County Department of Development was approved for a third year. This is a program we've had at the Livingston campus. It's a program intended to help some of our students who are low income and qualify and have at-risk situations, providing them tutoring, extra tutoring, ACT prep, and some wellness programs. A few of our students who have gone through that program have come back to us this summer, some of them serving as mentors and tutors in the summer program, which is pretty awesome, and some of them talking about their experiences in college and how the program helped prepare them to be successful on college campuses. So we're very proud of them, proud of the partnership, and look forward to another year of success with that partnership. That's all I have for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Item 7.0, recognition of visitors. There were no ahead of time requests. And Madam Treasurer, was this the only submission?
Yes, it was.
I would like to call down Crystal Davies, please. And her assistant.
Forgot one. Good evening, President Begney, Board of Education, Mrs. Thomas Manning. My name is Crystal Davies. Formerly a resident of 8907 Lupine Drive in Reynoldsburg, and will soon be residing at 775 Tricolor in Reynoldsburg, and I'm temporarily sheltered at 8474 Priestley Drive in Reynoldsburg. Technically, I'm homeless. While this isn't exactly the definition one might think of when they hear homeless, it has definitely been an eye-opening experience. Being without my own things has been an incredible challenge. Though I've not been hungry or needed help through this experience from a food source, I was still dependent on the kindness and compassion from someone to provide me with something I didn't have, even though temporarily, and that was shelter. I am grateful for the challenges that provide me with empathy so I can stand before you tonight and not just pay lip service to a cause, but to have actually experienced difficulties and have pulled through so I could help others. Last year, I approached the Board of Education to sign a resolution to support the Feed Ohio initiative from Governor Kasich. Thank you to the current board member and previous board members who signed that resolution. The support was greatly appreciated. A little over $100 in cash was raised by Mr. Begney and former board member Sandy Long. They chose to take a pie in the face for charity. A group of kids from East Stem built a catapult, and it had amazing accuracy. I believe Sandy has recovered well from her whipped cream smothering by Mr. Begney. I hope the board will again pass a resolution and be just as creative or more this year to support the Feed Ohio initiative. This initiative does not come from me. I am here as a representative. The exact wording from the governor's resolution states, "Whereas volunteerism strengthens communities, addresses vital societal concerns, and enhances the quality of life for all citizens, and whereas community organizations, faith-based organizations, civic and humanitarian groups, and governmental agencies are encouraged, my emphasis, to organize local events which meet unique community needs, and whereas because helping the most vulnerable among us is a value common to all faiths, it is fitting to celebrate and encourage efforts by the interfaith community to help those struggling to improve their quality of life, and hunger is an issue of grave concern that transcends geographic and faith boundaries and must therefore be addressed with efforts in every part of our state. And whereas Ohioans are encouraged to join with Americans throughout the country to commemorate the National Day of Service on September 11th 2016 by participating in a statewide volunteer challenge focusing on the issues of hunger. And whereas Ohio Faith and Community Service Groups will join with the governor to organize and execute a statewide interfaith effort in 2016 to raise money and collect food products for food pantries throughout the state. Now, therefore, we, John R. Kasich and Mary Taylor, Governor and Lieutenant Governor of the State of Ohio, do hereby recognize September 1st through September 30th, 2016 as Ohio Volunteer Challenge Feed Ohio 2016 throughout Ohio and encourage all citizens to take part in its observance. I'll give you the stats from last year. They were impressive. Approximately 3,500 pounds of food and personal items were collected for Reynoldsburg Helping Hands. This effort included about 65 volunteers with an average of 3 to 4 hours, some did more, in service hours per volunteer. So taking, let's say, 4 volunteer hours per person times 65 volunteers equaled at least 260 man hours. We also collected about $500 in total cash donations. The City of Reynoldsburg also passed a resolution to support Feed Ohio last year, so this was a community-wide effort. I hope this year to do even better. I am approaching you earlier this year, as I know last year Mrs. Tornero was concerned with the timing and expenses for kids going back to school. I don't choose the timeline of the initiative. That comes from the governor and is meant to coincide with the September 11th National Day of Service. Since school starts on August 10th this year, I believe September 1st through the 30th is ample time between purchasing school supplies and adjusting to the new school year before the Feed Ohio initiative begins. Last year, we had 19 captains spearheading the effort, representing different faiths and organizations. Mrs. Dunlap was one of those neighborhood captains last year and can testify to the spirit of service and goodwill this initiative brings. I hope this year individual schools will get more involved through either a canned food drive or wearing jeans for a dollar, if that's not passed tonight, for the middle and high school ages. The fundraising can be very simple. It is so helpful. The cash goes toward purchasing perishable items like milk, eggs, fresh fruit, and vegetables. We're a community. From time to time, we may be dependent on something we can't provide for ourselves. And it's the compassion from others that help us through those difficult times. We may have different ideologies, but our governor is asking us to come together on this issue to feed our hungry. More information can be found at www.feedohio.org. Do you have any questions for me?
How excited are you to throw another pie in the face of me?
That was one of the funniest things I think I've ever seen, and poor Sandy was like the best sport ever. Mm-hmm. When you bombarded her.
It was a machine, by the way.
It was a catapult. And again, our East M students are meticulous in their design. There were no design flaws, only operator errors on some incidences. But yes, I'm looking forward to very much to raising money in that capacity again.
I think it was a wonderful time last year. I think now that we have a little bit more time to plan, we can work together with the athletic department and try and have some sort of a grand display. And I know you and I have talked a couple of things about what we could do to make sure we can kind of increase the opportunity to participate in this. So I think it's a good idea, and it's something the board could consider.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thanks. Thank you. Item 8.01, financial statements. Madam Treasurer?
The only item I have on tonight for your approval are the June 30th financial statements. We ended our fiscal year with revenues coming in about a quarter of a percentage point over the May estimates, and 630 expenditures came in about a percent under estimates, which made our ending cash balance about $23.5 million. Anybody who wants to come in and go into the details with me, of course, is always invited to do so, and I know Mr. Whitman's going to make his appointment on my calendar after the board meeting tonight. So, and I did send some stuff out to the board, so if you have any questions about what I sent out to you, feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Tenero. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Whitman. Any other discussion? Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Moving on to item 9.01, 2, 3, and 4, minus the sections that were discussed earlier. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. Dunlap?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truax. Do I have any discussion?
I had one question, and I can't recall if it's in one of these first four, but it's regarding personnel in general. And if this question is not appropriate for this section, then we can bring it up at the appropriate one. But I know that some of the names under resignations also show up elsewhere under employment. So that looks like it's a sort of a change in status. But then I noticed there's also sections called, you know, change in status. So I was just wondering, what's the difference between, you know, a change in status and then a resignation and then employment?
Mr. Whitman, members of the board, there are several employees who see job announcements and job vacancies that they feel more inclined to make a change in their professional career. So the change in employment, that means somebody resigns one position and takes another position someplace else in the district, that's an internal move. The change in status would be for our employees who are eligible for an increase on the pay scale in some sort based on education, and pretty much education would be the reason for those changes. So that's the difference.
Thank you for the explanation.
I would like to wish those that are leaving Reynoldsburg the best of luck, and I'd like to welcome those that are coming into Reynoldsburg the best of luck. It's a great district, and I'm sure we can all work together to get a lot of great things accomplished as we get closer to that school year, which is not that far away. Any other comments, questions?
I had one question. Superintendent Manning, maybe you could clarify that. I know our director of... Courtney Heppner, our director of innovation, was not listed on resignations, but she is no longer with us. Can you explain why? You know, how that employment was.
Mrs. Dunlap, members of the board, Courtney Heppner's position was run through the ESC primarily because the first year of it was sponsored through a grant. So we received a grant that was run through the ESC, so she was hired in that manner a couple years ago. The second year, we just kept her on at the ESC just for the sake of logistics and convenience for her. So any ESC employee who resigns is not an employee that the board needs to approve.
Right.
That's why she wasn't listed there.
Okay. Thank you.
How are we doing with overall staffing now? I know we had a few come in just under the deadline. How many positions do we have yet to fill in the teacher ranks and administrative ranks?
President Begney, members of the board, we are, luckily, we're down to single-digit numbers. We're trying to fill in the certified area. We did have a late resignation from the Bell High School principal, academy principal, so we are feverishly searching for a replacement for that academy. And pending the decision tonight, we may be looking for another principal position. So right now, our focus is on trying to ensure that we have fully staffed classrooms on August 10th, which we have every belief and confidence that that'll happen. Classified, we have a few positions we're still looking to fill, but I think we're right where we need to be. We should be fine before the start of school, providing we find leaders.
Thank you for the update. Madam Treasurer, call the roll.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion's passed. Items 10.01, 2, 3, 4, 5 are up. Make sure everything's in there. Are up for action. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truax. Any discussion?
President Begney, members of the board, these items are just our annual agreements that we have with various services and organizations. Items 10.01, 06, and 09 are all placements where we have students who we cannot serve in district, that we need to contract with folks outside of the district to have appropriate placements for those students. And items 10.02, 3, 4, 5, and 7 are all contracts and agreements for services to support our students in district. So just status quo things that we do on an annual basis.
You said items. All I have on the agendas here is items 10.1 through 10.5.
Okay, I thought I would have missed a page.
Were there other ones? Because I don't have them listed on either the short or the long version.
Yeah, that's all I got.
They removed a couple at the last minute.
That's all we have on that.
Okay, I have an old agenda from earlier today, so maybe mine does not reflect the changes. But
not a problem.
Let me see. So I don't see those on here at all.
So the motion's on the floor to approve 10.01 through 10.05. We can at least get those passed and then circle back for the other ones when...
Yes, there are quite a few more. I don't know what happened to those, but they were showing earlier today because I have them on my printed version. So I'll look into that.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Whitman.
Yeah, the questions I had, now I'm not sure if they're in here anymore or not. One was, I see that Eagle Wings is in here, and then at least in the earlier version, there was also a step-by-step, and I'm not sure if that's just not here anymore. But my question is, it looked like they were providing similar services. Could you tell a little bit about the difference between the two?
Mr. Whitman, members of the board, Eagle Wings primarily serves students with behavioral issues, behavioral concerns, and Step by Step is an organization that serves severely autistic children. That's
okay.
The difference.
Okay, thank you.
And I'm just really struggling to figure out where those other items went, but I will look into it and get back with you.
Any other questions or comments? Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Curriculum and Programming, items 11.01, 2, and 3. Let's make sure everything's on for action. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Tornero. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Dunlap. Any discussion?
President Begney, members of the board, 11.01 is our student handbooks, which we have to approve per policy every year. We did some cleanup on some our handbooks to ensure consistency around some of our major concerns we were having around discipline, bullying, and safety and security. So all of those handbooks should now be very consistent and have the same language. 11.02 is our annual pay to participate fees. We are making a recommendation that the fees not change for the 16-17 school year, but we may need to come to the board and discuss an increase for the following year. And the last item, 11.03, that is the last of our College Credit Plus MOUs that we have with this one primarily with Columbus State Community College. It's a little bit of a change in our original agreement. Back in 2012, we entered into an agreement with Columbus State, and it was based on the new regional learning center that we have at Livingston Avenue. At the time, the board contributed $1 million to the tune of $1.23 million in funds to help renovate the building for that regional learning center. And Columbus State also put forth some dollars for that center. It was a partnership. We had worked out in the original agreement that we would be able to recoup, we meaning Reynoldsburg City Schools, would be able to recoup some of those funds that we invested in the way of reduced tuition for our students at that campus. Now with the law, and every school district in the state of Ohio has, by right, can enter into an agreement with all the universities and colleges. Columbus State wants our agreement to read exactly like the others, and so we had to go to the table quite a bit this spring to negotiate what would be fair in the way of trying to recoup some of those dollars that we invested. So we worked out a new agreement, or addendum to the agreement, to include a lease agreement for 1 year. This is a one-year agreement, and our business office did due diligence and determined our overhead and our cost for running that building, that campus, per square foot, and determined $11.50 would be a fair price per square foot. So we have entered into agreement, and Columbus State has agreed to pay us to the tune of $260,000 for the leasing of that space for this year. We want to re-engage in February and talk about, is this fair agreement? Is this working for you? Is it working for us? So we'll reassess that in February. But this is a little bit of a change, and it really is in the spirit of trying to, their organization wants to be consistent and did not want to extend us an agreement that didn't reflect the rest of the agreements with districts around Central Ohio. But we also have an obligation to ensure that we are doing what we can to get those dollars back into our general fund.
And as far as the impact on students, as far as tuition fees and mm-hmm. anything that would be at a cost to them, are there any changes?
There will be no impact to students. The impact really comes to us, and the amount of money we now pay for a credit hour is consistent with all the other Central Ohio school or Ohio school districts at 166, as opposed to the super, super reduced rate we used to enjoy just for kids on that campus. But with the lease agreement, we believe we're going to be able to offset that.
Do you have, I guess this is for Superintendent, for
Superintendent Manning or Ms. Miller, do we know about how much we recouped so far of the 1.2, 1.3 million?
That doesn't come to us in straight dollars. That came to us in reduced fees that we were paying. So right. I could do the calculation. I don't know off the top of my head, taking the number of students at the reduced rate versus if we had paid the full rate.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering about how far along are we in that process of recouping. And I know you said $260,000 next year mm-hmm. Is the lease agreement. And so that's obviously about a quarter of that.
Right. And the original agreement was a 10-year agreement. So if we start in 2012, we'd be 4 years into that. Mm-hmm. So we would have another 6 years to do that. So I'm sure they'll be more interested in seeing how far along we've already recouped those dollars than we would, because it may appear that we're a little ahead of the game, mm-hmm. the 10-year plan.
Okay.
Yeah, the original was a 10-year return on our investment. So we had mapped out that over 10 years, and we made calculations depending on the number of students who took advantage of college credit plus at that time post-secondary. Mm-hmm. And we had always planned on a 10-year repayment.
Okay.
Now this new agreement should be accelerating that.
Right, and if I'm looking at the $260,000, definitely, and if we're saying, okay, that was a 10-year agreement mm-hmm. and that's 1 year, that would seem to me, yeah. Okay, great, thank you.
I did have, I'm sorry, Mr. Whitman, go ahead.
Okay, so it also seems to me that the original agreement for recouping the investment kind of depended on how many students each year went to mm-hmm. CSCC, whereas this, it's a number right there in black and white.
Yes.
For better or for worse.
Yes, it's a harder number, easier to track, and isn't a soft number depending on the number of students who take advantage of it.
Okay, just making sure.
I had a question earlier from a parent that was talking about the handbooks. Are these just what's listed on the website? Are these just the stuff that has changed or have been added to, or are those the complete versions of everything?
The handbooks that you're approving tonight should represent the complete version of the student handbook.
Okay. The one that was brought to my attention was Baldwin, that it had certain materials missing from it as far as some things. But
and I can tell you, President Begney, that we would want to approve these before we swapped out what's online.
Yeah.
So they're probably looking at an older version.
That's why I just wanted to make sure we're all clear on where it all comes from. If there are no other discussion questions, anyone? All right, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion's passed. Item 12.01 and 12.02, the moment some of us have been waiting for. The issue with dress code revisions as well as the senior class fees. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. Dunlap. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Any discussion?
I'm going to jump right in and just throw this out there. Over the past month, since our last meeting, I've spent countless hours looking over the information that's provided to us about the dress code, including letters that have been sent to the district and then forwarded on to us, input sessions, my own research. And while this board made no promises to change the dress code, we did promise to re-examine it, which we have done. But between last month and this month, the complexity of the policy really began to weigh on my mind. I know we were trying to make it a little bit simpler, and it seemed like while we were giving some more options, we were making it even more complicated to and more difficult to enforce. It appears to me that we were making it more complicated and therefore more difficult to enforce, and that takes away from instructional time in the classroom. I understand that this policy was originally created with security issues in mind and to make for a better learning environment for our students, something I supported wholeheartedly. Personally, I still appreciate students who are dressed in a more uniform manner. But I also understand that security concerns are not the same now as they were when the dress code was originally drafted. At that time, we did not have secure entrances to our schools, but that's no longer the case. I've read public debate on both sides, the pros and the cons, the district dress code and uniforms, and I'm convinced that research can be found either way, as with so many other instances, and its effect on student performance. Last night I spent 4 hours looking at and reading dress code policies from 9 surrounding districts, including our own, which, aside from Whitehall, we have one of the most complicated policies on the books. In fact, most of the other policies are significantly less strict and a lot more simple, thus making enforcement much easier and time spent in the classroom. With that in mind, I'm throwing this out there at the beginning of the discussion before we go any further, because there may not be any support for this. I'm proposing that we relax our dress code quite a bit from our former restrictions. I actually kind of drafted something up, and I could pass this up and down. This is basically based on Pickerington's dress code. I found some of them had dress codes policies online, but they were outlined more once you got into the handbooks themselves. It also addresses the top 10 offenses while offering considerable latitude on the part of students. It's a more affordable for parents. Many of the letters that I had been receiving talked about having to buy 2 different sets of clothing for students and, you know, single parents. This is a very difficult job for them. This is very enforceable. And it would end much of the hardship and debate about dress code in our community. But there are, again, as I said, it addresses the top 10 offenses that I have found to be the most prominent in many schools. But it also addresses some security concerns. Of course, we've talked a lot about hoodies, and that's something that I'm very against when it comes to security. In our hallways and in our classrooms. So I'm throwing this out there for any discussion or any debate.
What I'm seeing on here, these items look reasonable enough, but I would hesitate to adopt this wholesale without being able to kind of compare and see if there are things that my little proposal mm-hmm. amendments cover and this doesn't.
And this is but, it, I'm throwing this out there for discussion.
Okay. I'll just say I have my own comments on each of the major items of in our own dress code. The tops, the bottoms, the hoodies. and I'll talk about those as we get to those particular items. But as for maybe some of these items can be incorporated in there, I'm not sure.
I did read. I tried to respond to every letter I received, and it became nearly impossible. It was very difficult. But I did read every one that we received, and I appreciate those getting forwarded on to us. I just heard time and time again, and I think everybody here would concur that they heard, why do we not offer blue jeans? And while I was very against blue jeans before, after hearing this over and over and over in letters, and it making it much easier if they're not in rips, and there are still, some limitations put on them, and we have no sagging and things like this. They are often, you'll find them in the workplace. And I had many letters that made great arguments. It would make it much easier. I just feel like so many of the things that we added last month were just complicating things. They were giving students some other options, which, some people were asking us to look into, but yet we were making it much more complicated. And again, when I went and looked at 9 surrounding districts, with the exception pretty much of Whitehall, that is very close to a uniform, I think that we were by far the most complicated. And that makes it very difficult to enforce once in the classroom, which is a major concern of mine.
I've been pretty against blue jeans from the beginning as well. However, we're allowed to wear blue jeans at work, but we have to pay. If we don't want to wear shirt and tie or collared shirts and khakis, we have to cough up the money, but it's available at any time. So I choose to wear blue jeans quite a bit. It's easier given some of the things that I have to get involved with. I don't want to ruin a nice pair of khaki pants. Given the number of emails and correspondence that we've had around blue jeans and the fact that they're readily available for the students, the parents don't necessarily have to buy school clothes and after school clothes, it kind of makes a little bit more sense that perhaps we do revisit that. There was really no one stood up and said, I want my kid to wear khakis. Everybody that said anything said, I want my kid to wear blue jeans. I am of the opinion that we could allow them with a caveat that the first time some kid comes in with ripped jeans or inappropriate jeans, they're done. When that student came up to us earlier this year with a couple representatives that she wanted to propose that they were within dress code, both of the models who had blue jeans on had rips and tears. They were covered by either a shirt or a sweater or the one student's jacket. So it's going to be hard for me to completely accept blue jeans with the knowledge that at some point some kid's going to wear ripped pants or ripped blue jeans either as a fashion statement or as a, hey, I'm going to do it even though it's against the rules. So just something to bear in mind.
Well, I think the reality is no matter what we set forth, whether it's blue jeans or khakis, whether they have a pocket or they don't, kids are going to push the envelope.
Right.
So to me, respect, I would like to make it the simplest so that kids are not spending as much time out of the classroom. Personally, I really like the idea of the look that we had going before, but it just seems like it has gotten so complicated and so difficult and has for teachers and administrators and has caused such a hardship on parents with the letters that I'm receiving. I find it difficult. I was elected to represent constituents and make an informed decision, but I can't sit up here and just say, well, I know what I prefer and what I like and I think looks good and then go forth with that. I'm trying to take all the information that I've gathered And as far as jeans go, I think if you stipulate that there are no rips or tears allowed in blue jeans, then there are no rips and tears, and then it follows the rest of the dress code violation policy. And again, kids are going to push the envelope. Even if they're wearing a uniform with very little to go on, they're going to push their socks down. They're going to try to wear some leggings under their skirts, the girls, maybe. Kids are always going to. I want to make it as simple as possible, as safe as possible, and reduce the hardship on both parents and teachers.
I would agree with that. I mean, if we remove the stipulation around blue jeans, it lessens the responsibility of the administrator to make the call, you know, is this a blue jean or is this blue denim pants or blue denim slacks? It removes that from them having to touch or feel the fabric to see what the kid's wearing.
I move that in order to kind of move the discussion forward, that we consider the dress code as it has been, you know, posted on the website, and then just consider each of the main points, you know, in order, and those of us who want to make changes to or add or delete parts, we proceed that way.
That sounds like the most efficient use of everything.
So is that a movement on the floor that we...
You can make it one.
I move that we consider that as procedures of this discussion, that we proceed by considering in turn each of the main sections and offering revisions along the way.
There's already a motion to approve the dress code as it appeared on the agenda, the draft dress code. So that's already on the table. So you could work through it, and as you go through, it might be more efficient if you discuss the changes and then maybe vote on them at once, unless you think there's going to be a lot of different changes. But already on the floor is the dress code, is this, so you can modify that as you go along and discuss it.
Okay.
So if you want to come to...
If he makes this amendment, does it take... As I sit here, I look at the dress code from Pickerington, and I look at ours, and of course we really don't have the time and to get input from teachers or principals or whoever else might... I mean, my first glance at this is like, wow, that kind of does it. And my concern has not been that I wanted to change the dress code as much as I want to make it I want to enforce it. What's the sense in having the rules if we're not going to enforce it? And so I wasn't so anxious to change anything. I was just thinking we need to be able to enforce it. So I guess my idea, I see what you're saying, Neil, but at this, I'm thinking, because we don't have the time, school starts next month, and we don't have the time tonight to look at the dress code from Pickerington and really get the input that we need to make a decision, is it at all possible to not make any changes except possibly the blue jeans? And stay where we are one more year, giving serious thought to something from Pickerington. I mean, this, it looks like it covers, although we don't have the time to sit here and go back and forth between each thing, and to also ask people what were the reasons behind some of these things that maybe I'm overlooking, and I would say, oh, if only I had known, I wouldn't, you know, so I feel like we need time. That's my biggest concern, that I do agree, when I look at this, this is making it more complicated, not making it more simple, ours, the one that we've tweaked. I hesitate to go that direction, but at the same time, I hesitate to go the Pickerington direction, not having the time to really study it. And that's why I would put out the idea of maybe, is it possible to add blue jeans and for a year and do some serious comparison between the Pickerington and ours?
I would think that that would be part of what you had been mentioning, that if we just quickly go through, and when I say quickly, we know how that means, but, you know, through the items themselves, does anybody on the board have an issue with, you know, the bottoms, color style, so on and so forth, and just go through the items, vote on them individually, and as we get to the blue jeans, if that is something, the direction the board wants to go, then we can do so. I agree, just for the time's sake and for the fact that there are parents out there that have already gone out or getting ready to go out shopping, we need to have something set one way or another. I don't know you know, just quickly glancing at some of this, in reality, a lot of it does look the same, with the exception of some of the, you know, the hot topics that we're talking about, the blue jeans, the collared shirts. Those tend to be the two biggest ones. So I would think that if we just concentrated on those two particular items of the collared shirt as they relate to waiter wear, as well as the blue jeans, would probably be a good thing. And then, like you said, take this small step now, then review it as we go through the year before we do anything where we go from very long thing to basically a one sheet. I think this is probably where we would like to get to at some point in time, where it's very simple for teachers and administrators and students and families to know what can and cannot be worn. But I don't know if we can make that quick jump from here, especially with school starting in less than a month.
If everything that we feel is important that is in our present dress code that Officer Kiesel, that we all agree on, is in here, which it kind of does, but I don't have the time.
There are significant differences. There are significant differences.
And that,
I mean, they're definitely, like, for example, I added the IDs because that was something that was very important to us in security. That
so
they
that
don't
wasn't in theirs?
No. And that was a security issue that was very important to us. I added no hoodies. That has been something security-wise that has been very important to us. As I said, there, I tweaked a little bit. You know, basically, though, it is allowing jeans. It is allowing no collars, but there is no, you know, jewelry or clothing promoting drug, alcohol, tobacco use, or having messages that threaten or profane or sexual in nature. You know, some of these things that we don't, you know, allow as well. But there, it is a significant swing. It is a significant swing.
Well, for time's sake, why don't we just go through what is listed as far as our current dress code and then go from there. And then if there are changes that are needed, then we can go about them at that point in time. So we'll start off with the first ones where it talks about the bottoms. And again, I don't know if you can enlarge up top for everybody to see. Pants, shorts, and capris must meet all the requirements below. Color, any solid color without decal or print. Style must be worn at the waist, cannot sag. The waist is defined as the hip bone from the bottom of the rib cage. One controversial thing was the must-have pockets. I'll get back to that one, but let's get to the blue jeans things. Is there any opposition right now to not allowing blue jeans in to be added into the district for at least this next upcoming year?
Okay, are you asking that we allow blue jeans?
Yeah, I'm asking, okay. Can we, are
we
allowing?
We have double negatives here. I'm a little confused. Yeah.
So can we allow
clarify,
denim blue jeans?
Yeah, in other words, can we take out that red denim blue jeans, just remove it from the list?
Yes.
I would favor that, and I would also add where it says translucent material, maybe say translucent or transparent. Maybe that's obvious, but
again, I think we're
it's a loophole.
Now I have to go change.
I don't know. I would say just leave it.
Yeah.
Translucent.
Let's try not to add more words.
Right.
Then
I think it's pretty apparent there.
All right.
I would support blue jeans.
All right.
But
I will support
with the caveat that there are no rips and
following,
no tears.
Yeah, following the same thing, no sagging, no holes, no tears. As far as any decorative things on the blue jeans themselves, there are times where they have little bedazzled things and things of that nature. They aren't allowed anywhere else. I don't know if that's something that would be. I bring this up now because it's going to come up in about 3 weeks.
We haven't had a problem with this before, or have we?
Well, we
haven't had blue jeans
in quite a while.
Oh, okay. I don't see why that would be a problem, but if someone has other insights,
you might have more experience. I'm thinking of going to the store and shopping with my son and daughters, and but again, it may be personal taste. I don't remember a lot of. I know some jeans have a little bit more bling on them, which I don't feel is distracting. But if there's something else that you've seen.
No, as long as it meets the requirements of not sagging and having holes and tears, I'm fine with that.
I'm fine as well.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I worry just a little bit. I mean, the more I'm thinking about it, I just worry about when you see, it's not necessarily a hole, but they certainly, I mean, I've seen people in blue jeans that look like they should be in the trash. There might not be any holes in them.
Sure. Faded.
And that's what I think probably, am I right? Was that the reason that was there because they have the tendency to, I mean, they can look really bad.
And I guess it's not the hole itself, but maybe the location of the holes and tears and things like that. And even I sit here thinking of bling and how, yeah, you know, that just opens up.
Yeah, it does.
Well, and if the jeans are faded to the point, like Elaine is saying, that they should have been thrown out in the first place, they may come to school and not have any holes, but by the end of the day, there may be some rips. So that's
yeah, well, the same thing could happen for khaki pants, in all
sure,
honesty. I mean,
sure.
If you get things caught. Again, when we're trying to make sure that we're trying to simplify things, I think if the jeans as we are intending, where they have no holes or tears or rips or open spaces or whatever else it is that's in there, which I think is covered in the original policy, that shouldn't make too much of an issue with it. Now, obviously, somebody gets caught on a chair and it rips or something like that, you know, everybody's going to know, and
yeah,
you know, she's going to, you know, somebody will walk into class and say, it wasn't a hole, I promise I got ripped last period or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. So we've got that one taken care of. Shall we go to the tops?
Let's go to pockets.
Pockets. Any comments on pockets?
I don't like the addition of pockets. When Dr. Cosgrave stood there and explained the idea behind why they use pockets, I understand that very well. And for anybody who wasn't there, and I was just in Target today, and in the and I use the term very loosely, jeggings, because those can be nearly leggings or tights, for those of you who haven't been shopping for this type of thing in a while. They put pockets on those. So if what originally Dr. Cosgrave was using the whole pocket litmus test was for, was to determine whether or not these truly were pants or if they were leggings, which we prohibit. And I understand, because that's almost like walking around in, you know, a hose or something, depending on how thin or how thick they are. And I know that I've bought some before for my girls. They call them jeggings, but they're just like jeans. But I saw some in the store today in Target that were packaged in something this small, and that's pretty thin, and that can be distracting. But they had pockets.
Well,
I think the addition of pockets, if that was to eliminate or be the litmus test for these jeggings or leggings, it's not going to hold up because they make them with pockets.
They got a hold of our plan. Oh, well.
Can I add one more thing, too?
Sure.
And it was something, again, this is what I love about getting some of these emails, too. And there was a parent who sent an email to me, and there was her daughter. She was going to be shopping for her in the Mrs. area in the store, maybe not in juniors, or and many of the pockets or the pants that she was looking at originally, thinking, okay, we're not going to be having jeans next year, but those misses, they didn't, many of them are very professional looking pants and they don't have pockets. And so I just think the while I understood the initial idea of pockets, I don't think that it is going to keep us away from jeggings or leggings, which we prohibit anyways. And number two, I think it would prohibit other students from wearing some other very nice pants.
I agree with that. The main reason for having this pockets test was when jeans were forbidden. So I think it doesn't serve a purpose. It only complicates things now. So I would support removing the pockets restriction. My last comment before moving on to tops is for length. I would what my intention is to ultimately absorb the section on dresses into tops and bottoms, so that it doesn't have its own section anymore, so that when we make changes in rules about tops, we don't have to go through, you know, remember to say the same thing for dresses. That's how inconsistencies creep in. So with that in mind, I would say for length, I would say shorts and skirts and skorts cannot be shorter than 2 inches above the knee, and then the part about no slits in skirts or dresses shall be higher than 2 inches above the knee. I would just move that into the length section here for bottoms.
Well, I know originally when we separated the dresses out last year, it was kind of the same because the dresses fell under, they had to have the collar and all of those types of things. But
yeah, speaking of that,
let's finish. Let's finish. Yeah,
that's, so if you have a skirt that's very long. It would fit in here. I'm just thinking this through so that it could fit in here as well, because it cannot drag on the floor.
Well, pants cannot drag on the floor.
Right, but there are. I wear longer skirts that go down to my ankles. And so I guess, boy, I'm blanking on the type of dress or skirt these are, but I know some of them can get quite lengthy. And you don't want them to drag on the floor. So I'm just thinking this through out loud as we go through this discussion, because I think it's important to have this discussion. Yes, that would fit in there because they should not be dragging on the floor. Not thinking of just shorts, but long as well.
Well, I didn't change the pants. It just said pants cannot drag on the floor.
But you want to add dresses.
But basically, I'm not going to mention dresses. Well, okay, so shorts, skirts, skorts, and dresses cannot be shorter than 2 inches above the knee, and pants cannot drag on the floor, and silent on the issue of how far down dresses are. So if someone has a wedding train, I don't know. But anyway, so to summarize, what I think we've talked about is get rid of the pockets language, get rid of the denim blue jeans restriction, and then my proposal is to absorb the length requirements of dresses as appropriate to bottoms in here.
Anything else in the bottoms section? All right, let us move on to the tops.
Mr. President, before we move on, can I just be clear
Absolutely.
That I have everything down?
You couldn't catch up on all that?
I'll give you my copy of this if you like, Madam Treasurer.
Okay, so we have
it. I would like to hear a synopsis as well.
On number two, we're going to remove must-have pockets. Mm-hmm. On number three, we're going to remove denim blue jeans and add no holes, tears, rips, sagging. Mm-hmm. And number four, under length, we're going to add in addition to shorts, skirts, skorts, and dresses.
Correct. And then move the sentence from dresses. It says, no slits in skirts or dresses shall be higher than 2 inches above the knee. Move that out of the dress section and add that to the length section for bottoms.
Okay.
Are we good?
We're good.
Let us move to the next one, tops. All right. Must meet the following requirements. All tops must have sleeves. We'll stop there. Any issues with all tops must have sleeves?
I've received some emails, a few, saying that, having sleeves, that they object to that requirement. To me, I think that's not too unreasonable, a standard to ask. So I'm inclined to leave that, but I'm willing to hear what other people say about it.
I'm inclined to leave it as well.
Same. Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. That's why we're doing this in smaller stops. Next one, either a collar or mock neck or Henley.
I propose removing that collar or mock neck and replacing it with, in the length requirement, just saying... regarding length, on the top end, no more than two buttons unbuttoned and no more than 2 inches below collarbone exposed. That was from here, I think. I think that's reasonable enough without bringing collars into the mix.
Can I propose, is there any support? I just actually, not even propose, I just like to discuss the support of collars themselves. The collars and denim blue jeans are probably the two biggest things that I got in my letters. When I look at collars, I really wonder how much are they adding, or how much are they complicating the whole thing. I don't want offensive messages on shirts. In fact, I'd love to keep them with plain shirts. If someone chooses to wear a collar, they could wear a collar. If they choose to wear a nice T-shirt that does not have any lettering, and actually that was the case. We had that several years ago at the middle school level when my son was there, and it was so much easier. It was just a plain T-shirt, not undershirt. I would support going to no collars because I think, again, it would make it a lot easier on parents to shop. It would make a lot easier on administrators and teachers as they are policing this in their classroom. Any thoughts?
If we move to something without collars, we must make sure that there is something to make sure that the neckline of the shirts are appropriate, to have some languages in there. And that's the only thing. So when I'm looking at what you gave us tonight, the torso must be appropriately covered, i.e. no bare midriff, excess exposure of cleavage, cut off t-shirts, et cetera, things like that. I would like to have something in there just because, again, of pushing the limits. And again, what is a t-shirt to you may not necessarily be a t-shirt to someone else. Just a little more clarification, because with collars, typically it does not open up to certain areas. And I say that as somebody who's in high school and knows how limits are pushed, and that's, I want to make sure that we are protecting our students as well as our staff and everyone else from any issues whatsoever.
I know that, I mean, even with the collars, one of the items of contention was the mock necks with a zipper, which are collars, but then on the other hand, there's still the, you know, how, as Dr. Cosgrave said, how far down does it zip, and then you got to deal with wearing something underneath it. So I think just saying under length that, all tops must meet bottoms, no torso can be exposed, no more than 2 inches below collarbone exposed. So that's something it seems to me you can check sort of with a glance. Yeah.
Okay.
And then again, absorbing the language about dresses into there. Actually, I think nothing specifically needs to be said about dresses here. Except that if you do have a dress with a scoop neck or something, I just said dresses that do not meet the requirements for the tops must be worn with a top that does meet the requirements.
Which is very similar to what we have. All right,
So you still want collars?
No. I'm just saying that, you know, collar or not collar, it's just an issue of, you know, coverage around the neck and shoulder region.
Yeah, if you go down the line of not having a collar, do you allow V-necks or crew necks? And to Neil's point, how far down does that V-neck go?
And then that's another police issue. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Every day you're going to be dealing with somebody who is below the 2-inch mark every day.
Well, if you have something in there, the torso must be appropriately covered, i.e. no bare midriff, excessive exposure of cleavage, or cut-off shirts. That addresses some of it.
By the way, I would say this is twice that the cleavage has come up, and I would like to, as much as possible, end up with a dress code that is stated without regard to gender. Although I guess I suppose some men could have cleavage, but, you know. But that's what I would like to aim for. And regarding Madam Superintendent, the policing. Oh, sorry.
No, I agree with what you said. There is something to be said for moving beyond the gentrification of clothes. I completely agree.
And regarding the policing issue of, well, I mean, I think 2 inches is supposed to be just sort of a rule of thumb. Not that, you know, we expect teachers to get out there with a tape measure. Just something that they can look at a glance and say, oh, that's definitely, you know, more than 2 inches. But I think that issue also would come up with, you know, with some of the non-traditional kind of collars we've been seeing recently too.
So, when push comes to shove, no matter what, whether collar, no collar, things like that, regardless of which, it should be no more than 2 inches below the collarbone exposed.
That's what I would recommend. Yeah.
Okay, whether it's a collar or no collar, and that includes Henleys, mocks, t-shirts, things of that nature. Any other comments on tops?
Do we have a consensus?
Do we have a consensus?
So, to sum up, someone else better read the changes. I think we got some weird list numbering here, and I kind of changed it on my.
If we were
paper.
To go without collars, the way I looked at it, when it says tops must meet the following requirements, all tops must have sleeves, and I just crossed out, and either a collar or a mock neck. B, no words, graphic designs, or logos. C, decorative scarves may be worn, cross out around the neck in place of collars. Then styles, polos, button-down shirts, mock necks, turtlenecks, because those are still options, sweaters, and plain t-shirts, no undershirts. And in another part, we have no undergarments as well. So that's almost doubly covered. But then still keep no more than top two buttons, unbutton, and no more than 2 inches below the collar exposed, which would cover whether that has a collar or not. So if you chose to wear a collar, can't be super scoop, or I mean not wear a collar, couldn't be super scoop. If you chose to wear a collar, let's just say you're a young man and you have a button-down shirt and you don't have it buttoned down to your belly button. So those were the changes if we were to accept no collars. And then the next would be B. Mock necks can have a zipper and all that. That could be crossed out because that's not of concern anymore. No words, graphic designs, logos on top, except logos located on the upper left-hand chest portion on top, would remain in fabric, any fabric, with the exception of translucent material, leather. Personally, I'd like form-fitted put there, or pleated material. And that would remain.
Everybody got all that?
That sounds mostly okay. I would just say that we need not say anything at all about mock necks or turtlenecks or sweaters anymore, yeah, if we're no longer concerned about collars.
I'd like to leave collars, but I might be the only one. Well, that's okay. I'd love to hear everybody weigh in.
I'm open to hearing remarks in favor of collars. I've stated my preference, I haven't voted yet.
I'm in favor of collars to the degree that I think they give a more professional appearance. And not to say that our kids need to go to school to be professional, but I think that if they do wear a collared shirt, perhaps they're more apt to act in a more professional manner. That's not to say that they're going to. Kids are going to push the limits. And I think if we change it to no collars, then we're going to be fighting shirts that are, you know, still questionable in nature, you know, as to the degree of the logo that's on the shirt or the collar that gets stretched out. I mean, you know, there's 1,000 ways to circumvent that law, but or rule.
It's going to be harder to enforce by far, I think.
I tend to think that it probably would be a little bit more difficult to enforce because collar shirts are typically uniform in most natures as opposed to some of the other ones. However, that being said, I can see, you know, there are a number of cases have been made about why, you know, we don't need to have collars as opposed to anything else. So this is the last remaining question. I think everything else has been decided outside of maybe issues with radar wear and things like that, which that would be solved by what we do here.
Because a collared shirt can also be a flannel shirt.
Sure.
Untucked, you know, very, very, very casual. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people think of a collared shirt, they think of, you know, maybe a button-down or they think of a polo. But I've seen some pretty sloppy-looking collars as well. So I don't think it always emits professionalism.
Well, in order for Madam Treasurer to mark down what we're doing here, then somehow we need to figure out what she should write about collars without yet taking a vote on in the entire dress code. So I'm open to suggestion how we should proceed here.
Is anybody, I'm not in the collar, I'd like to leave the collars as they are in our present dress code. If there's two other people, or do we have three to another direction? I don't know.
We could just do an informal poll, could we not, Ms. Miller?
Could do that, or somebody could, we could put it together and have that be the recommendation, then you can always amend it. I think it might be easier if you just kind of got a feel
right
from
now.
Discussing where you want to be on it.
Okay. I understand the points made by board members Truex and Tornero. But overall, I still feel that it would be overall simpler to enforce without language for collars, just with language about coverage.
If it's simplicity in nature that, you know, we're looking at enforcement, by all means, you know, then the collar issue is a no-brainer. If we're looking for ease of enforcement, you strip out that whole part and it's done. If we're looking for, you know, an attitude about Reynoldsburg students, or, you know, the air of professionalism, then that the collars need to remain.
I'm inclined to keep them, but with certain exceptions of things. I was talking with a parent they have a student that is autistic, and there's very similar concerns about the way the collars feel on the neck and things of that nature. And their concern was, you know, something for a collar, you know, for a collarless shirt or a mock turtleneck. So I kind of understand that. I do think it does look a little bit more presentable, but it's not necessarily a deal breaker for me. But I would like to think that we would have some options for those students that have issues like that to be able to wear something else. But again, if that's the case, then if there's no collared shirt, there's no issue with that student.
I agree with Neil, obviously, because I brought this subject up, and I don't feel the need for collars, but I do feel that there need to be, as I said, some restrictions, but pretty simple as far as not, it's already written in there, not allowing messages on shirts, and also not allowing undershirts to be worn with the coverage. Again, you know, that's easy. That's in there already.
Why don't we, for 1 year, go without the collars, but we track every little bit of data in the process of it? You know, are there increases in numbers of disciplinary infractions, dress code violations, things of that nature if we do so? And then at that point in time, come back for it. Because, again, if this is something that we're going to do, it doesn't necessarily need to be permanent. And if we find out all of a sudden in December that anarchy has gripped our schools because of collarless shirts, then we can make an adjustment, you know, given that information at that time. But, I, again, we're kind of going into a speculative nature right now.
I would recommend... Okay,
I would be okay with that.
Okay.
I would be okay with, you know, not doing collars, as I said, but I think the data gathering for that might be kind of burdensome and hard to do. And
we could do it informally. Okay. You know, we could talk to teachers and administrators. Is it working or is it not working? And then they can say yes or no, and then we move on from there.
Okay, but I'll state that, you know, since it looks like we have three board members in favor of collars and two not in favor of collars, well, then, you know, I'm willing to leave, you know, to let it stay that way and just let my, you know, comments just be on the record.
Okay. I think we can go without collars for 1 year and then reevaluate as we go through the process of things. Don't let me down, students. Don't take too much advantage.
Okay, I think Ms. Miller needs a little bit of clarification.
Can you go down through the policy and tell me exactly what you want to get? A is all tops must have sleeves. Remove... Oops, can you pull that back up so we can... And remove either a collar or mock neck. Leave B. C, decorative scarves may be worn around the neck. And then is everything else okay? In that is that all you're changing in that?
Under style, T-shirts, would that be added?
I had in there, you know, those were just, when it said style, those were examples that you could still wear. And when I was looking at that, I left that in and added plain T-shirts, but I think it needs to be clarified that no undershirts. Again, I think we have that in another part of the policy, but it would behoove us, I think, to have it there as well.
So under style, you want polos, button-down shirts, mock necks, turtleneck sweaters, T-shirts, no undershirts. Is that...
Mm-hmm. Okay. I personally would put plain T-shirts in there, just to be absolutely clear.
Okay, plain T-shirts.
Solid color.
So not your Cedar Point T-shirt.
Okay, so
with, you
know. Yeah, maybe solid color T-shirt might
Thank
be
Thank you
a
for
better.
Ever shouted that out.
I know, again, shopping for my son at one point at the middle school, those were very readily available in many different colors, and they looked very nice. In fact, they looked a little bit nicer than my daughter wearing a, crumpled up flannel that has a collar untucked some days to school.
Was there anything else other than the tops, if you want to scroll down so we can make sure?
Mock necks can have a...
Well, without...
Does that need to still be there?
Can you go back down to the tops?
I asked you too soon, I'm sorry.
So under 1B, does B still need to be there?
I don't think none of that needs to be there.
Well, no words, graphics, designs, logos on
what
tops.
What I'm saying is that under tops, you would have A, B, C, and then you just pick up the C, no words, graphics.
because you're basically saying...
Because that's repeating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But still, 1AI does...
it's not a requirement anymore.
Right, but it does expect... it does address the exposure, which Mr. Begany was talking about. So if we are going to, if we get rid of all of that, I would propose that we add the torso must be appropriately covered, i.e. no bare midriff, excessive exposure of chest, or cutoff t-shirts. To
Or would it just be simpler to put no more than 2 inches below the collarbone, so that way it's
there.
Just...
Actually, I like that yeah. better.
So just cut everything out but that tiny little part.
This is D. E.
All right, so then mock necks can go. The no words graphics is already in there. The fabric stays in for number two. Any fabric with the exception of translucent material, so on and so on. That, does that, are we clear?
So no, can you say that one more time? That
yeah.
No more...
Yeah, just no more than 2 inches below the collarbone exposed.
Okay, that's obviously in there, so I'm missing it. Okay.
Yeah, that's language that came from somewhere else in the dress code. I think that.
Yeah.
And I like I like that.
You know, one regarding graphic designs, one or two emails I got said, we need some clarity on what exactly is a graphic design. Is it like no paisleys, you know, no polka dots, no stripes? What?
I would, when it comes to graphic design, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong with the interpretation, this is like logos from businesses and companies and things of that nature, not necessarily like not necessarily like a plaid or a pattern of sort. I think it's more graphic design where you're actually trying to, like NFL, NBA, movies, things like that.
Okay.
All right.
Not at this time, because we're trying to get through, I want to get through this part. It's not that I don't want to say it. Is there something very specific that you're, I mean...
Well, the plain t-shirt piece, if everything else can have a pattern on it, like a striped t-shirt, I get the no logo piece for a very casual t-shirt, but there are shirts without collars that are patterned for both boys and girls that would fit in a no collar option, but if you call that a plain t-shirt, you take that out of the equation if you just go solid color.
I don't think the intention is to say that's not okay in my mind.
No, but it's again for clarification purposes. Is it a good point? So
should we remove plain or solid t-shirt and just say t-shirt with the caveat as we said no
undergarments?
Regarding that, I noticed that, I mean, when there was a separate section for dresses, it said pattern, you know, with it said something about, you know, a school-appropriate pattern, and then I just, when I tried merging the dress section into the tops and bottoms, then I just said, let's just, you know, take out the language about patterns, and then, you know, dresses can have patterns, shirts can have patterns, and pants can, too.
Just no graphics.
So discussion about that, about you know, patterns such as that gentleman's, or you know, or stripes, or other things on tops, bottoms, or dresses from anyone.
No, I would be okay with the gentleman's shirt, or you know, a plaid or something like that would be okay.
No, absolutely, it wasn't my intention to by making it simple like that. I was maybe oversimplifying it in my mind.
Okay. Then what I would recommend we do is take from the dress section the remarks about a school-appropriate pattern and move that into the tops and bottoms section.
Is that allowing plaid shorts?
Yes, it is.
It would, subject to, you know, length requirements. That's my understanding.
But it says bottoms, any solid color.
Oh, yes, right. So that was what I was saying. The language about school-appropriate patterns, take that from the dress section and move it into the section on tops and bottoms to replace any requirement about
solid. So that would not include plaid pants.
No, Neil's saying that it would include plaid pants.
Mm-hmm. Well, just so that would be the change.
Right.
If that is applied to both tops and bottoms, that would. And to tell you the truth, I got a letter about that as well, and I see no problem with plaid pants or shorts.
Okay. Oh, we're thinning out the dress code. Does that clarify everything on tops and bottoms before we move to page 2? I don't want to speak too soon this time. Seeing no other discussion, let's slowly work our way down to page 2 before the next question. All right, so most of the top, that stuff has already been absorbed up into the other layers. Outer layers may be worn dress code. Top and strings, that's pretty much been taken care of with the other one.
Okay, we're on top outer layers, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
May only be worn over a dress-compliant top and must meet all the requirements below. Style must be one of the followings. Sweatshirts, V-neck, scoop neck, or crew neck. Vest, cardigan, suit jacket, fleece, full-length zip jacket, letter jacket, no words, graphic design, logo, except logos located on the upper left chest portion of the top. Accepting to this list, to this requirement, a letter jacket. Mm-hmm. Are there any concerns about things that you wear outside for outerwear as listed?
I believe coverage of the collar issue should remove any concerns about this here.
Where's the collar issue?
I don't see.
I mean, I think having covered things with our language on collars earlier, or the 2 inches of below collarbone coverage, then I don't think any of this needs to be there. Although I don't see any harm in it being there. If other board members think the top outer layers section needs to be there.
No, I think you're right. The collared issue is taken care of. I don't see anything that needs to be addressed here.
Because it's never been an issue as far as what kids are wearing in the buildings as far as the outer wear, based on the information that we got last time around. And give you a moment to think on that.
So what we're saying then is, with the elimination of collars, that this whole section is moot because you could wear virtually anything.
No.
I'm just trying to run scenarios through my mind on this one.
Then the new shirt will become the jacket. Now, because there are no provisions around my skeleton on my jacket, or whatever you're going to put to express yourself, if we eliminate it altogether. So you either have to put it where it says top, and layers must adhere to whatever the top is, or you do have to keep something in there.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
In that case, I'm fine with that top outer layer. Top outer layers proposal as written.
Agreed.
Okay. Raider wear. Must meet all the requirements below. Designated days in agreements of administrators in grades 5 through 12. Raider spirit may be revoked by administrators. We'll stop there.
All right. I would strike the first sentence about designated days. I had to check to see if agreeance really was a word, and apparently it is. But I would replace that with Raider spirit wear is appropriate any school day unless administrators state otherwise for a particular day or days, and then keep the sentence saying it may be revoked by administrators.
So you're proposing that Raider spirit be allowed at any time?
I would propose that it be allowed any time. That was a close, or also people were proposing that it just be every Friday, or in any case, on a more regular and predictable basis than it is now. So, and allowing it every day of the week has the benefit that some letters noted that if somebody's out of dress code, it's easy, relatively easy, to have a few spare Raider spirit t-shirts on hand, and you can borrow one of those for the day, and then, be compliant without having to have an in-school suspension. However, if the other members of the board would prefer to have it just, Raider spirit wear is every Friday, I would be okay with that too. But I would like to see it allowed more and more consistently and more predictably than it is now.
I would agree with that. I think Raider wear should be worn as much as possible. We should be proud of our school, and our, that's one way to do it. And since we've gotten rid of any collar issues, that opens up the door to Raider t-shirts, whether they're for the soccer team or band or football or whatnot.
It would, well, with the exception, yeah, it would almost be legal anyway with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that originally the issue with Raider wear became up when students would move from one academy to the next, and one day it would be a Raider wear in one building but not in another, and then it created issues with that, and then not every building had Raider wear day as frequently as other buildings, and it became this hodgepodge of things. This would eliminate that process.
I would agree with your proposal.
The remaining items I am okay with, but I would propose a special note regarding hoodies, but I'll save that until there's no more discussion on the rest.
Because it is addressed in Raider spirit. You're thinking beyond that?
Yeah, a special note on them.
Now, as frustrating as it is for some students to understand about the issues with hoodies, being a teacher in a high school and dealing with issues with safety and concerns about identity, it's not something that students are going to like, but I'm opposed to allowing hoodies back into the buildings for that purpose. This is one of those things that adults have to deal with a different set of responsibilities than the kids are there, and I would say a majority of kids probably would never have an issue with it whatsoever. However, I've seen enough issues in my time as an educator that there are more issues that are come up with the inclusion of hoodies in a building as opposed to hoodies outside of a building.
Yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't have known that there was such safety considerations with hoodies, but hearing from you and Mr. Kiesel and Dr. Cosgrave and other people and people writing letters, I'm convinced now that okay, they are a security concern, and so I'm willing to say no hoodies in school. But the complaint was, well, gosh, our boosters sell hoodies and we can't even wear them. That's stupid. And so I said, all right, so between that and allowing no hoodies at all, either way, you either complain that we can't wear hoodies at all and people sell them, or if we sell them and you can't, never mind, I'll just read my special note, okay? I said, okay, so because hoodies are popular items to wear outside of school and at school events such as football games, and because they can be good fundraising items for athletic teams, clubs, or booster organizations, these organizations are allowed to sell them. However, because they are forbidden in school, or because hoodies are forbidden in school, these organizations are strongly encouraged to put a statement on order forms to the effect that hoodies are to be worn only outside of school hours. And that seemed to me as a compromise to allowing people to raise funds with them, for students to wear them in many of the places they would like to, keeping them out of school, and just acknowledging right there in the policy why we're doing that.
I like that. I know it's adding to it, but it's more of a clarification than it is addressing any or complicating the issue. So what's the consensus on Raider Day every day?
I'm okay with that.
I'm all right with it.
It definitely does lead to a change from things as they have been, and so there will be an awkward sense of transition with that on all sides, so we'll all have to be patient as we transition to it. All right. Is there anything else as far as the rest of the issues?
Everything else is as far as I see.
All right, so the prohibited items: leggings, jeggings, sweats, yoga pants, bottoms, hoodies, exposed undergarments except T-shirt, which we've already kind of gone through that, headgear, caps, hats, sweatbands, bandanas, visors, or scarves inside the school building, tattered or torn clothing, sunglasses unless prescribed, heavy metal chains, slippers, and house shoes. Is there anything else that we... I'm perfectly fine with those issues that are prohibited.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm fine.
Yep.
And then the rest of it is just going into the violations issues, which is not something that this is going to be about. Madam Treasurer, are you good with everything?
Yes.
I'm sure Neil will be more than happy to sit down with you to finish the rest of it. All right, now because we are so-called, because of the changes that are on there, we have to reset the clock, I would assume.
Yes, we have a motion and a second to approve the policy as it was presented. So someone will want to make a motion to amend the policy with the changes you discussed and which I've written down.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truex.
Second.
Second by Ms. Dunlap.
So now you're just voting on amending the policy, and then you'll come back and vote on the amended policy.
In 30 days. Or when the next board meeting.
No, we can do it tonight.
Okay, I just want to make sure that we're giving the public enough time that they understand what we're doing on that. Because I know usually policy changes have to be the 30 days out. All right.
Well, we talked about it last month, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a significantly different dress code policy than last month. That's why I just wanted to make sure.
Okay.
All right, so we have a motion on the floor. Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Truex?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I would just like to explain my vote. I mean, I will be voting no, just because I still go back to I like my idea of I'm uncomfortable with this drastic change kind of at a last minute, so to speak. So I just need to get that out there.
Any other discussion? I apologize if I cut you off.
That's fine.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
No.
Mr. Whitman?
Just one more time to be clear, that we are voting to accept these changes, which we will then vote to implement. Okay, aye.
Mr. Begany.
Aye. Amendments added. Now, do we have to do another motion for?
You already have the first and second for the policy.
First and second.
So now you're going to vote on the amended policy.
There we go. Just to make sure we're all clear. All right. So now the amended policy.
Mrs. Dunlap.
Aye.
Mr. Truex.
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero.
No.
Mr. Whitman.
Aye.
Mr. Begany.
Aye. Motion passed. Now we'll go to item 12.02, which is up for what is hopefully a limited discussion on senior dues. In accordance with the superintendent's recommendation to approve the following senior class fees of $50 for all of the seniors that are on their way to bigger and better things coming up. Do I have a motion before, or Madam Superintendent, do you want to explain anything about where the fees go or anything else like that, or if these are different than typical years?
President Begany, I was actually hoping that you would vote on this tonight, as we will be collecting fees soon.
Okay.
Before the next time we meet. But the academy principals were hoping to have, I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on the dress code, hoping to have an increase of $10 for senior dues to help offset the cost of graduation, meaning the rental of the space and such. We have a substantially low senior dues comparably to other school districts across Central Ohio, and so they are requesting a $10 increase from $40 to $50.
I apologize. It was just listed as discussion on the
it
sheet.
It is. Okay. It is, and it should be action.
Okay. So this would just be for the cost of, I assume, the rental of Nationwide?
No, there's lots of things. That's just one
example. Just one part of it.
Yes, okay. Parking. It doesn't nearly cover everything incurred with graduation. It's just a contribution toward the graduation activities.
Okay. Any discussion? Have a motion then?
Well, do we need to move to officially change it from discussion to action, or?
No, you can just make a motion to approve it.
I move that we approve it.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Whitman, second by Mr. Truex. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. Item 13.01, Everest High School Staffing Agreement and Employment. This is to hire someone through Everest through our process of things. Is that okay? Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Tornero. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Any discussion?
President Begany, members of the board, just as we sponsor Everest, all of their personnel and their payouts go through our organization, so this is something that we have to do every year.
Any other discussion? Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Items 14.01, 2, and 3 are up for action. Business and operations. So Starfy, is there anything you would like to share as far as what we're looking at here?
As you know, the district issued an RFP for custodial services. It was a fairly comprehensive RFP, around approximately 45 pages. Basically, this is a labor-only agreement that would, within the agreement, we've identified the spaces covered, the cleaning of the spaces, the staff expectations. From the RFP, I believe we offered it, or we basically solicited 12 different companies to submit proposals. Of the 12, six submitted proposals. We narrowed it down to two companies. Of those companies, we brought them in for interviews as well as did official site visits. And as we went through the process, GCA is the organization that we want to recommend to move forward with an agreement. The reason the agreement is set up the way it is on the documents is basically because we're looking at a two-week turnaround to start this on July 25th with the goal to have this in place prior to the start of school.
Can I ask a little bit more clarification from yourself and maybe the two members of the Buildings and Grounds Committee as to just to explain a little bit more? I know there were three delivery methods that you were actually looking at, and why you chose the other two delivery methods would not be feasible at this time.
Yeah, absolutely. When we looked through, I mean, we looked at basically three different models. We looked at a completely kind of what I'm going to call a collectively bargained or in-house model. We looked at an ESC model, which is an option we can utilize, as well as we looked at a third-party option. Of all the options we looked at, only one proposal was more expensive than the either in-house or the ESC model.
Mm-hmm. Was there a concern that and I just want to put this out there, you know, because I've been accused of, you know, making this a union issue, and it's definitely, for me, it's not a union issue. You know, having a subcontractor come into our schools, which happens all the time in businesses all over the United States, I feel that we are a little bit of a different animal in that our commodity are not widgets or some other type of service. You know, we're in the business of children. And when custodians come in the evening, it's not always to an empty classroom or an empty school. It's to a school full of children, some adults, some kids, because there are activities going on all the time. And just as I value our own employees that are employed through our district, because they're vested and they have, they're here for a longer period of time and they have our children's best interest at heart, I feel that our custodial force, the fine men and women who keep our schools clean and keep our kids in school because they can stay well, should be vested employees as well. I see this as a one-year contract, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think there were some concerns, and, you know, Ron or Neil, there were some concerns that it would be very difficult, even at this point in time, to hire our own employees and be ready for the school year. I know you talked about a difference in funding and in cost, but sometimes I think it's worth it to go the extra mile and spend a little bit more when we're ensuring the best environment for our children. So, you know, it's my hope that, you know, again, I feel like the school year has come upon us so quickly, and we're doing some things maybe, you know, today with the dress code at the 11th hour. We're trying to get some things in place for the start of the new year. But it is my hope that at some point, this is a one-year contract. We will re-examine, and we will have more discussion as a board as to hiring our own employees who, you know, again, I just feel are more vested in our school district.
To kind of carry on to that, you know, we've used outsourced materials and outsourced employees in the past because, again, we're also dealing with taxpayers' money, so we have to be judicious with that as well. Though I do completely see your point of there's more of a buy-in sometimes, it seems. Had we not had certain things come up with our last company, we may not be having this discussion now, so hopefully we can move forward, and this company will do the job it needs to do to make sure our schools are clean and our kids are safe, and then we can kind of go about other things in this arena, sure. Mr. Whitman?
I'll summarize a little bit or add on to some of the things that Mr. Starr said. But we did indeed consider in-house and ESC and the various third parties, and I've certainly gotten input the same as you have, saying that don't consider just cost when deciding among these three options. And there were basically two issues. One, as you brought up, is that our own employees are more likely to be vested in the district, can build relationships with the faces they see coming in day in and day out, et cetera. And then there was also the issue of can the third party simply do the job like they need to, and we certainly had some problems with that. So regarding the second one, can they do the job? I think we've learned some lessons from that, and speaking with Mr. Hoyt and Mr. Pickett, as well as Mr. Starr, I think the detailed CFP and specifications and questions that they asked of the third parties tried to address a lot of the issues of, can they simply get the job done? Now, as for whether it's the extra cost of ESC or in-house, which would be about between $200,000 and $300,000 more, am I right?
300 plus, yeah.
Okay, depending on how we went, is that worth the intangibles that we get from our own employees? And I don't know the answer to that. Part of this is because, as Mr. President noted, we might not even be looking to hire a new custodial service at all had we not had the issues with the other contractor earlier. And because we only ended our relationship with them in March, that kind of put us on a crunched timeline here. So, but as you know, it is for a year. And as for having further discussions about the issues you raise, I would not be averse to having those discussions over the course of the year. But I think for now, at least addressing the issues of, can the company get the job done, and that it does have some significant savings over doing it in-house and with ESC, and that we're going to have to hire something like, 40 more people or 30, 20 more people?
About 20 more staff.
Quickly, in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That's why I think it's advisable to take the recommendations of Mr. Starr.
A couple things I just want to point out that two of them. One is the company we went with, GCA, actually has 250 school district accounts. And so Mr. Hoyt just came from Michigan on Sunday and Monday, went up and visited one of the school districts up in Michigan. I believe they've had to account for 6 years. And so he went through, he talked to the staff, he talked to the superintendent there, and he saw what they could deliver. And I think part of our reasoning for going with a company their size is that, they are, I believe, over a $1 billion organization. They have a lot of school district accounts. They're in higher ed, they're in a lot of different venues. And so we spent a lot of time trying to outline staff expectations around, FBI, BCI background checks, around that they will be uniformed, protocols around making sure at the end of their shift that they're locking up the buildings and everything else. And so we put a lot of time around those types of things in terms of each type of space, what frequencies are. I mean, these are things that we don't have in place today, even with our own staff. And so I feel like we went above and beyond in terms of trying to make outcomes-based management. And so once we get through this, we can test and say, does it work, and can they deliver? The other thing I'd like to point out is that outsourcing didn't start with the last contractor. I believe that it's been in place for, 3 years, Tina, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
4 years. So I just want to make sure that this was a decision made prior to my arrival here. There are economical reasons for do that. Every dollar we save, in essence, can come back into the classroom. The reality is that if we bring it back in-house, it will take time to do that, and that's something we're looking at. Probably 6 months to do it effectively, as well as we need to hire additional supervision, because if you're hiring that many staff, we need to have to make sure that we have the right management to support that as well.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on the other two items, 14.02, the surplus items and payment in lieu? No? Did I forgot, because my mind is now gone. Did I call for a motion on this yet? I'm going to call for a motion.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Whitman. Do I have a second? Second by Ms. Tenero. Any other further discussion? Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Item 15.01, a move into executive session. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truax. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Whitman. Madam Treasurer, please call the roll.
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Move to executive session. Returning from executive session. Is this on? Nope.
Are we all on?
Just speak louder.
Oh, all right, I'm on.
Oh, you're on?
She's getting it, I think.
Hello?
Yeah. Maybe you're light.
There we go. All right. Returning from executive session at approximately 10:08 p.m. First order we will be going to is item 9.1, item number 2 and 3 on for action. The hiring of Dr. Jocelyn Cosgrave as assistant superintendent. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Truax, seconded by Ms. Tenero. Any discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Truax?
Aye.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Motion passed. That brings an end to our regularly scheduled board meeting. Are there any motions on the floor?
Was there another part of that about the?
I put the two of them because they're all continued with her position. I'm in the clear, right, with that one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Are we passing these down to me?
Not unless we need to. Are there any motions up for at this time?
I'd like to make a motion to alter the 2015-2016 contract of Superintendent Tina Thomas Manning to include pickup on the pickup at a 10%.
Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Okay, any discussion?
Pickup on the pickup is a concept that I had to get familiar with over the last few years, so it's kind of an inside baseball term, but if I understand it correctly, one fairly standard thing in educational contracts is paying a portion of health care and then the remaining portion the employee is responsible for. So far, so good? Mm-hmm. Okay. And then pickup on the pickup is paying for the rest of that too. And it's a measure that, although fairly common in Ohio, and accepted in many quarters, is also subject to some controversy because it can be seen as a way of being able to say that someone's salary is lower than it is when really this benefit does add dollars to it. But it is, with that said, it had been a very common contract for many superintendents across Ohio. Madam Superintendent was kind of on the end of the one of the first people to get the sort of new contract written without that in there, and instead with basing compensation on large part on goals. So that's sort of the background on pickup on the pickup. If I've missed, feel free to correct me if I've misunderstood any part of this.
No, that's
okay. Any further discussion?
Is the motion just retro, or are we going? Can we all include it all in one, or is that not the motion you're making?
Would it be retroactive?
If you're changing the contract, are you retroactive and going forward?
It would, yes, it would change her 2015 contract, and then that contract would be in place for 2016-2017, or her 2016-2017 contract could be discussed at the appropriate time.
No, it's got to be one or the other.
So this, then my motion would be to amend or alter her 2015-2016 contract, and then that contract be carried forward into the 2016-2017.
Are we good, Tammy? Do we?
Yes, you can go back and amend the contract. Just a point of clarification, to retroactively do a pickup on the pickup, we'll probably have to do like a lump sum payment and then work it through, but I'll work out the mechanics of that as long as I know the intent of it.
Any other discussion?
The goals are still on my mind, and I know we had a scenario where rather than the goals be 3%, 4%, 12%, you know, it multiplies out if you maximum goals are awarded. There was another scenario with each goal being worth 1%. And given all the work that Mrs. Thomas Manning went between preparing the goals and explain, and we've been through and understand how she's met or, you know, what is pending and whatnot. I'm reluctant to just leave the goals out completely, and I would like to, and I don't know how I do that from a Robert's Rules of Order standpoint, but anyway, to add that to the motion.
We have a second on the original motion.
I thought it was Ms. Tenero.
Seconded.
Sorry.
If not, Neil jumped in.
Neil did?
I thought it was you.
I just seconded that.
Okay.
You could offer an amendment to the original motion, and then that would be voted on. And then if it passes, it'd be added to the original. If it doesn't pass, then it would be just the original as it stands.
So I just asked, can I amend it to add the...
Yes, yeah, so just make a motion to amend the original motion with what you just said.
I'd like to amend the original motion with adding 1% per four goals, per each of the four goals, versus the 3% from the past.
In addition to pickup on the pickup?
Yes.
Is there a second? Seeing none, motion has not passed. Back to the original motion of pickup on the pickup. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Treasurer, would you please call the roll?
Mr. Truex?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Nay.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Nay. Motion has passed. The contract has been altered. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Ms. Dunlap. Second.
Second.
Second by Mr. Truex. Meeting is adjourned.
No, I need to call roll. Quickly.
Oh.
Mrs. Dunlap?
Yes.
Mr. Truex?
Yes.
Mrs. Tornero?
Aye.
Mr. Whitman?
Aye.
Mr. Begany?
Aye. Now I can do it.
So this is all.
Yep, that's it. That's nothing.